Hey guys, welcome back to now our episode number 4 of No Quitters Podcast with Dan Ray
and Vinny Saucedo. So today, guys, we have a special guest. Here is someone that is building two cities in Georgia. Like, I know developers that build houses and
an ADU
projects,
or something.
An ADU, but this guy's building two cities, guys. It's like over 10,000 homes. And so without further ado, Eric Elgato, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. I'm glad to be here, and I'm excited to share some knowledge, insight, mindset stuff. So
you're accomplishing big things right now, man. Like, who gets asked, hey, do you want to build a city? Like, that doesn't just start from there, right? And your success right now is great, right? But it didn't start here, right? Can you walk us back to, like, how was it like growing up as Eric?
Oh, wow. Well, I'm the oldest of 4 kids. Okay. You know, my dad was an immigrant. He came here from the Philippines. I would consider he was like a slave.
What year was that?
In the 1960s, maybe 59, 58.
Wow.
So he was in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was 6'2", which is tall for a Filipino, right? So he got a lot of attention.
Super tall.
Yeah. So he got a lot of attention. And, you know, he was a corps commander of the Philippine Army. He was a professor at a college. And, you know, these guys came from here and they asked, like, a whole bunch of, you know, Filipinos if they want to learn how to farm. So of course, he said, I'll go to the U.S., right?
All day.
So when he got here, they actually put him in a camp with a whole bunch of other Filipinos and Mexicans.
Oh.
And he worked in the farm. They actually used him as labor.
And probably paid him nothing.
And paid him nothing, right? And they're at a camp. Wow. and all that. In
what state was that in?
Here in California.
Okay.
Salinas.
Oh, wow.
He farmed up in north. Delano, you know.
Central Valley.
Yeah. Central Valley, right? So he did that, and then he met my mom. Her dad was in the U.S. Army, so she was a citizen. And then I don't know what happened, but my dad became a citizen because of me, right? They got married, I came, and he became a U.S. citizen.
Oh, that's great. Then after that, how was it like growing up? You went to school? Or?
We went to school, so I grew up there, and then we moved to Hawaii. Because my dad's uncle, he owned a touring company. And his dad passed away when he was young.
Oh.
So his grandmother raised him, and, you know, he was tall, right? So he was very industrious and he was a hard worker. And I think all us siblings, we got that from my dad, that hard work, the grit. So we went there, and then, Before we went to Hawaii, so he was a U.S. citizen, so he worked at Firestone.
The tire place?
The tire place.
Yeah.
And then, wow. And then something happened, then he moved to Hawaii, and then he was helping his uncle with the tourism, and then he got his insurance license.
Oh.
So he sold life insurance.
He went into sales.
He went into sales and he learned, you know, like, how to sell insurance. He was like part of the round table. I remember him getting all these awards. Mm. And then his sister lived here in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
She was a nurse. Of course, he was in the Navy. Mm. And then we moved to San Diego, and then he got his real estate license. And then 7 years after he got his license, I got my license. And so, like, I'm second generation, you know, real estate agent. Oh my gosh, you know, when you're 18 years old, you think you know everything, right? Of course.
You were 18 when you got licensed?
Yes. So, you know, of course I knew better than my dad. He was a door knocker, passed out flyers, call, and that's how it that's how it all started.
Wow. So your dad, I mean, your dad had to have been something good to go from being working in labor to, you know what, screw this, I'm going into sales.
Yeah.
Right? And that inspired you and motivated you to start that, right? And you were 18 when you started doing that.
I was 18. I was going to San Diego State. I was driving a Porsche because he bought me a Porsche when I was 16.
So your pops was doing really well in business.
He was doing okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people knew me as, oh, yeah. Oh, that's Eric Allegato. He drove a Porsche in high school. Yeah, that guy. So, you know, that's, he taught me grit, right? I mean, we didn't have computers back then, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know he bought like a Commodore 64 or whatever, but the MLS was like a book.
Right, right.
You know, back in the day. So, you know, and that's how I started. And my first year I did really well. And that's where it all started.
So at that time, you're saying really well, what was it like, number of sales or volume? Obviously that was a long time ago.
In 1982, I made over 150 grand.
In 82?
The average sales price was probably 40 grand.
Oh, wow.
So when I got my license, my dad was happy. He was super happy because the first
I could only imagine.
The first time I didn't pass, I got a 69%. He was so upset because he thought, you know, because I was that kid, right?
Yeah.
I had a fake ID. You know, I was that guy. Because you had to put in time. 69, it was only 1.5 questions you missed it by, right? Mm-hmm. So I got my license and, you know, and that was the beginning.
Gotcha. So you did a lot of door knocking, all that stuff. You remember going with him door knocking?
Yes. Well, when we were like 12 years old, me and my siblings, we would pass out flyers. We didn't door knock. So we would pass out his flyers.
Oh, I
house
see.
To house. So there's a community in...
like on weekends or any day?
Mostly weekends,
mm-hmm.
but for sure holidays. You know, all my friends were playing and we're passing out flyers, right? But our reward was McDonald's, was a big deal back then, right?
Yes.
So, you know, my dad had some cheap labor, you know, with all my siblings, but
yeah, it was passed fun. Out flyers for a Happy Meal.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Okay. And then after that, how long, because you had tremendous success, right? From there, when will you say was like your first time, like, man, I really made it here. This is where I belong.
Ooh, that's a great question. So I never really thought I made it. Even, you know, one of my goals was to buy Rolls Royce, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I got it, I felt satisfied, but I never really felt like I made it, right?
Gotcha.
So, you know, back then, you know, one of my goals was to do 1,000 deals. Like I never reached it, but I, you know, I got close, right?
Yeah. Damn close. 884
deals, but still
in 1 year.
Yeah. 884.
But still, I just never like felt like I arrived. So, you know, I have this affirmation.
Mm-hmm.
Every single day, you know, I say, I'm perfect where I'm at, and I'm eager to be better, or I'm eager to go forward, right?
Gotcha.
So,
where'd you get this affirmation?
I don't know. But, you know, because I've been coached by some amazing coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that really sticks in my mind is, if you think you've arrived, you're done.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because once you think you arrive, you think you know it all. Or, right, there's no next level stuff.
Got it.
And in life, you only arrive in heaven.
yeah, that's true.
Right?
That's true.
And so, you know,
wow.
I'm going to be 61 years old, and I'm still a student of this game.
You know, it's very interesting that you say that, because a lot of people, especially a lot of the listeners that we're trying to target, at 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, they think they know it all. Because we're in the information world, right? And technology overload, right? They kind of just read something and they act like they know it. And they act so much like they know it that they're willing to fight for it, you know?
Right.
What made you different?
You know, it's all about exposure. Like I'm here, mm-hmm. of course, you know,
absolutely.
You invited me here. It's, I had this thing that, you know, I've had some successes, some amazing successes. Mm-hmm. I've been through a lot and I have so much to offer people overall through my experiences, mm-hmm. through the successes. And, you know, I thought, and I think I told you this a few years ago, that if I kept everything to myself, it'd be such a sin to other agents, to other people, to the world, if I just kept it to myself.
Yeah, a disservice.
It would be a waste of the experiences,
knowledge
and everything. So that's why, I mean, I started coaching and now, you know, it was just for a contribution part of it.
Gotcha.
And something happened a couple of weeks ago that now I'm actually going to make it a legit business to reach even more people than I am.
To scale it.
To scale it.
Right.
Because I'm only coaching one-on-one right now.
Gotcha.
Right. So
you're going to go for like groups and stuff like that.
Probably groups and like modules or masterclass thing.
So let me bring it back a little bit, right? Even when you did 884 transactions, you still had that I'm still learning mentality. Do you remember? Can you recall like what were you feeling?
Wait, tell us what the income was that year.
884 deals, almost $18 million in GCI.
In 1 year.
Wow.
18 million. Wow. I always remember that. We'll go back to your question in a second. Imagine walking into work, you're in sales.
Right.
And in your mailbox, you had how many paychecks every day?
Probably on the average, about 3-4 checks per day.
Every day he went to work.
Wow.
That was ridiculous. When I heard that, I was like, whoa.
Right. And to be making almost $18 million or $18 million, right? You still had that mentality to be like, listen, I don't know it all. I'm here, but I don't know it all. Mm. Or what was your mentality, your state of mind back then?
Well, so it's all about the daily, right? Mm-hmm. And we're taught to track our numbers, right? So the average day would be a minimum of 100 contacts, 5 leads per day, 3 appointments per day, 2.7 signatures per day.
Non-negotiable.
That was the average.
That was his numbers.
Yeah.
The non-negotiable was the minimum contacts was 100. That's the non-negotiable.
100.
Contact.
Per day.
Not phone calls made.
Intentional calls.
Right.
Contacts.
So, contacts.
And that was a non-negotiable. But everything else, you know, there's some days I got 0 lead. There's some days I got 20 leads, right?
Right, right.
But those were the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So people don't understand that real estate's a contact sport. Is really a contact. The more contacts you do, the more opportunities you have.
Mm-hmm.
And with the more opportunities, you get better if you do more.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So my goal was to increase the 5 leads to 10 leads.
Right.
Right?
Your conversion ratios.
Right. So my skill had to be better.
Yes.
So I was a student of the game, not only for me to be better, but for me to be better to serve more. That was my mentality, right? So can you imagine getting rejected on the average 95 times a day?
Yeah.
And that doesn't include my wife, right?
Yeah, that's just that work. Yeah, it is a lot.
Most people, most agents and most people, they avoid rejection.
Yes.
They avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, why I leveled up was one of my other affirmations was, I have to get rejected at a high level.
Yeah,
that was,
you wanted to get rejected ASAP.
Right.
Right. As soon as I get rejected, I'm going to move to the next call and the next call. That's and right. The next call. But eventually I'm going to get a yes.
Success comes from the more rejection, especially in sales.
Yes.
The more rejection, the more successful you'll be.
Right. And there's a lot of people that are too afraid to even jump on the phone because of a rejection that hasn't even happened.
One.
That's right.
Right. Right.
They avoid it.
Yeah.
So Eric, okay. To get to the level of mastery that you reached, how much of preparation would you put into your day as far as like role playing, practicing? Because I know that was in your schedule.
Oh, a lot. So, and in fact, I just had this discussion this morning. So we don't know how we're going to wake up every single day. A bad mood, a great mood, an okay mood. We just don't know.
Or even at all.
Or at all.
Yeah.
Or at all.
Yeah.
Right? So that's a good point, because every time I wake up, I open up, thank you, Lord.
Exactly.
Right. Thank you for this day.
Yes.
Thank you for this breath, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I learned that you could control who you are being by doing the things that make you feel better, right? So then I have this morning mindset exercises that I do mm-hmm. every single day. Been doing it for years. You know, pray, meditate, visualize 10 things that I'm grateful for and 10 intentions for the day. And then, of course, I do my affirmations when I'm ready to get energized and all that. But I don't miss.
And that's a non-negotiable as well.
That's a non-negotiable. 7 days a week, whether on vacation or what, I do it.
Oh, wow.
Part of the routine every morning.
Because I know when I start my day and I do those things, I'm already in a powerful state. It doesn't matter if I use the bathroom 10 times that night. It doesn't matter.
Right.
I wake up how I am, but I control my day by what I do in the mornings.
Right. And you're saying a consistent of these actions allow you to tackle on the day, right, at ease, right? If you don't have these foundations, it's easy to get swallowed up by whatever the day has to throw at you.
One negative thought could throw off your whole day.
Right.
One.
Yeah.
And so that was just compounding, building, strengthening your mind. Here you are. What year was that you had the best year?
2005.
What year was it that you had the Rolls Royce dropped off in Palm Springs? I remember being there. It was at lunchtime. We went on break and he's like, everybody's got to come out.
I think it was 2003.
There was a flatbed waiting outside with that Rolls out there.
No, I think the Hummer was 2003. I think it was the year after.
2004.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, you had all these experiences, right, that a lot of people just dream of, right? But like I said, it didn't always start there. I mean, just from your upbringings, your father came here basically, like you were saying, like a slave,
yeah.
Right? And he was working in labor jobs. And then from there, he's like, you know what? I'm going into sales, right? Can you imagine your father never went into sales and stayed in labor?
As a laborer.
Wow. Yes. I mean, that decision.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It was so huge because now my two sons are in the business.
Yeah.
So that one decision
changed everything.
Yeah. Third generation real estate.
That's right.
And that just shows how our actions affect the rest.
Right. Right.
And who we are around, we become like.
Mm-hmm.
100%.
Proximity is everything.
Mm-hmm.
So here you are, just, you always grew and expanded in your business and growing in income and everything. And then did you ever, I mean, fuck, that was just success after success after success. I can't even ask, was there ever a time you wanted to quit? Because you were just thriving, right?
There's so many times I want to quit.
Let's hear about that.
It's hard. It's hard. Mm-hmm. Like, rejection is hard.
Right.
Being disciplined is hard.
Yes.
Making 100 contacts minimum is hard.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Dude, 100 contacts. Sorry, Eric. 100 contacts a day, 5 days a week. That's 48,000 conversations a year. How can you not succeed if you're talking to that many people?
Right. How did you arrive at on those numbers? Like, hey, I got to make 100 calls.
So, so real estate's a contact sport.
Mm-hmm.
The more contacts, I mean, now technology,
right?
Right. We talked about that earlier. Yeah. Technology is just is off the chain.
Yeah.
But organically,
and they don't have to use the white book or the white pages,
right? Organically, to do that, you become resilient. Like it was, eventually it was like brushing your teeth.
Right.
The effort is less.
Yes.
It doesn't become brainless, but the conversations become more fun because the more skilled you are,
right,
it becomes a game.
Right. So when you start, you're new, you don't have the skill, so you have to put in the time to make up for the lack of skill. But once your skill starts going up, the number of contacts, instead, as opposed to converting 5, now you're converting 10 or 15, and your conversations are getting deeper, faster.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
The skill set,
it's a
right?
skill set, yeah.
Repetition. I don't know if Colby said this, but repetition is key.
Yeah.
Then it becomes a no-brainer, and then the ego doesn't matter. Like, I don't feel like prospecting. Like, no, that's what you do, right?
Yeah.
Those things actually go away.
Exactly. And so let's just say, because a lot of people right now, especially in our industries, right, they'll dial for maybe a day or maybe a couple hours. 2 days is like out of the blue. A week, they don't do that.
Unheard of,
right? But you're dialing every single day.
For years,
right? What made you say, you know what? Even though I'm getting rejected, and maybe the first day, because I remember dialing myself, I didn't get shit for like a week or two. I didn't get anything, right? What made you be like, you know what? I didn't get anything, or maybe I got one, but tomorrow I'm going to go again and again and again until you reached 884 transactions. What made you do that?
So I know life is a process, right? So, I mean, it took me years to get to that point,
yeah.
Right? I had to go, I had to close 25 deals first,
mm-hmm.
then 50 a year, then 100, mm-hmm. then 2, right? It's a process.
Yes.
As you go through the process, Dan, it gets...
Your skill
easier,
goes up.
Harder, right? Your skill.
Mm-hmm.
But the main thing is your mindset. To overcome the making 100 contacts and 0 leads and 0 appointments.
Yes.
At that point, it's mindset.
Yes.
How are you going to go back the next day and do it again?
Yes.
Right? But the more successful you become, the levels of success, right?
Mm-hmm.
You overcome like a lot faster, right? What got me to go to the next level was Mike Ferry coached me for a year.
Oh, got you.
And he said, he's huge on numbers. He said, how much money does it cost for you to pick up the phone, whether you get rejected, hung up, or they said yes? It was almost $1,800 per call. Like, I don't care if they don't pick up. I'm making $1,800, almost $1,800.
Gotcha. So you broke how much you wanted to make until an hourly?
How much I made.
That's how much he was making.
That's how much you were making. It's not even how much you wanted to make.
So at that level, I was making $1,800, right? That was like a Louis Vuitton belt or whatever it was. So the more successful you become,
mm-hmm.
the easier it becomes. The hard becomes easy.
Got it. So a lot of people are wishing, man, I wish it got easier, as opposed to thinking, I got to raise my skills. I got to elevate what I know. And that's something that you had naturally.
Do the hard.
Yeah.
I know this won't be like a big thing for people, but you got to do the hard to get the easy.
right? Like, how are you ever going to get to the bigger things when you can't even do the small things?
That's right.
And see, even though he had that gift and he was good, he built it up to that. Like, he wasn't born with that. He learned the sales game. Mm-hmm. Now, all these years of kicking ass, and then you hit like a fucking wall. Tell us about that.
Okay, so I owned a real estate company.
Mm-hmm.
I own an escrow company. I own a mortgage company.
The whole nine yards.
The whole nine yards. So every transaction, right, I was involved with. You know, back then, you just had to disclose it.
Right.
Control is better for the client.
Right.
Right. Because before I opened up a mortgage company, I had mortgage companies. They didn't do good service to my clients. And I wasn't happy with that because I'm big on serving my clients.
So I think that's one of the things that set you apart, man, because you look at the quality of service that you're giving before a commission check or anything else. You don't even pay attention to that. The money will come, but your service is always there.
Oh. It's always there. So I own a mortgage company.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got targeted by the government for the stated income deals, which is a whole fiasco.
I mean, everyone was doing them back then.
That was all we could do. The prices were above FHA. Yeah. We couldn't sell this. What people don't understand is that would be like going to a car dealership and saying, okay, what kind of financing can we give these clients? Well, this is the options. And then down the line, they decide, okay, we're going to arrest all the people that did the loans for those cars. Like,
I don't know about all the people, but definitely people they can make examples of.
That's what they chose. Because we all did those loans. We all did those loans. That was the only thing out there.
I mean, I remember the 150% hybrid negative arm kind of shit. You know what I mean? Remember that?
Oh my God, yeah.
If your house was worth $500, they'll lend you up to $750,000.
The banks were greedy. Yes, that's what it was.
Right.
They got greedy. And then they didn't want to choose the guy that did 5 or 100 deals. Let's do the guy that did 880 something.
That way it's an example.
We're going after
to do
him.
Something.
And I was all over the place, right? Back then,
you were not
organic, right? Like 250 bus benches, grocery carts, dividers, right?
Wow. Like you pushed the envelope to make yourself known.
Marketing.
Right.
And
marketing.
That was back then, you know, that was big. And you were at the pinnacle of that state, right? And then they targeted you just to make an example. Right.
Well, now we know, you know, the government, right?
Right.
Now they're the ones ripping us off.
Right. Right.
They didn't want competition.
Know, right.
Absolutely. How did that impact your life?
Oh my gosh, a lot, because, you know, we went through the process and all that. And it was like 3 years, you know, going to court and all that stuff. And, you know,
did they shoot you an offer? Just plead guilty?
Well, at court, you know, prosecutors said, you know, they were sophisticated white collar criminals. We have no evidence. I said, well, if you don't have any evidence, like, what am I doing here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we had a discussion, you know, with the lawyer team because I want to fight it if they have no evidence. And, you know, they said, dude, we'd love to, but, you know, the judge and the prosecutor, they're on the same side.
Yeah.
And, you know,
and you went to trial?
No. I mean, I wanted to because, you know, they had no proof.
All right. But they were going to throw the book at you.
Yeah. And they said, you know, if we would have lost, we would have done 20, 25 years.
Jesus.
And at the time, our baby was only 7 years old.
Oh, wow.
Like, man. So, you know, we had a family meeting and then, you know, we made a business decision to, you know, take a plea.
Right.
And you wonder why, you know, they win 98% of the time, right? I mean,
yeah, they put you against the wall.
Yeah.
Right? Like, hey, if you're going to go, we're going to go with everything we have, right? And automatically, even if you're on trial, people are already looking at you but like you're a bad person because you're sitting on the other side.
Already.
Already. Right. So they have their system pretty much down. Right. And it wasn't just you that took this. It was you and
my wife,
and your wife. Right.
Because my wife was a lender rep. She wasn't even an underwriter.
Wow.
She was just, the rep, right? Getting
Jesus
deals,
Christ.
Right?
So they wanted to make an example out of your family because yep. you were a big fish.
So, you know, we went through that process.
Mm-hmm.
It was tough. You know, like I said earlier, you know, I mean, I'm looking at my son, he's 7 years old.
Right.
And I asked, you know, the judge to, if I could take, you know, my wife's time. So at least she could stay home, you know, with the baby. And
like
and
you wanted her to do her time.
Yeah. I wanted to do her time.
Yeah.
And they denied that. And then, yeah.
Not even like at home kind
home
of
confinement. Nothing.
No, nothing.
Nothing.
Wow. And so both of you guys were at one point locked up at the same time
right.
while your son's out here.
Right. So I have five kids.
Okay.
You know, the youngest at the time, he was seven. He was like 20 was the next youngest. But, you know, I always say this, you know, things happen for us, not to us.
Yes.
And God allowed that to happen. He allowed it, right?
Yes.
And he won't give us more than we can handle.
1,000%. After you went through that whole thing, how did that affect you? Is it in a positive way, or did that make you stronger? That make you kind of, because when you lose it all, man, I mean, I'm sure you went through a whole bunch of stuff and right. you lose everything. And on top of that, your kids, you know what I mean? That kind of hits you like within the heart, right? And when you're going through that, you kind of, there's only so many lessons that pain can teach you. No one else can teach you that.
That's right.
Right? How did that change you?
Well, I was a believer for, you know, for a while, right? And I've always been bold with my faith. And like, it was weird because I think because of my faith, like I didn't question God, why am I going through it? Like that didn't even enter my mind. People, you know, they asked me that, like, you know, were you angry at God? I go, no. And honestly, like, I don't know why. All I know is that God allowed it to happen. And he will not give us more than we can handle.
Mm-hmm.
And things happen for us, not to us.
Yes.
So, yes, it was tough. God,
mm-hmm.
took me, I mean, I can't speak for my wife,
mm-hmm.
but took me out of the world, away from my family, my friends, the business that I love. Like, I love real estate
mm-hmm.
because of how many people I help.
Right.
Right? So he took me out of that. It's like, you know, I pray a lot. And so my question to God was, what's my purpose here? Going to prison.
Right.
And I had no idea. Like, I had no idea. Like, you know, you see all the horror stories about prison and all that other stuff. Like, I had no clue.
Yeah.
But I just hung my faith on him. And it really increased my faith in him. And, you know,
your faith in God never got questioned, right? And most people, when things get tough, the first person that goes question is God, like, why God, right? Yep. Your faith never questioned that. You already know, okay, I'm here. What's the purpose behind it?
Yes.
Right.
So, I mean, looking back, right? I mean, so, you know, in prison, there's different cars. There's different.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I've been there too. So you guys know.
So I was, you know, I was in the others, right? And, you know, right when I got there, you know, your car, like,
they hit you around, up, yes.
And then, you know,
give you some soap.
Yeah. Toothbrush, right? Yeah. And then when I sat down, you know, this guy says, you can't sit here. Of course, me, I said, why not? Oh, this is the white table. You guys sit over there. I go, that's like, weird, but it is what it is.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And everything was so segregated, right? I mean,
it is.
My family, I have black people, I have Mexican to my family, like, right?
Yes.
And it's like,
all of a sudden you can't talk to the white people and you can't talk to,
it was weird to me, right? So then like I had to adapt to that.
But that's kind of like how the world is, right? They try to segregate us as much as they can when in reality we're all the same.
Yeah, I mean, even the TVs, right?
Yes, yes.
And all that. And then, you know, they have shock collars and then they have the whatever. Right. The others didn't have a shock collar, but, you know, after the guy left before me, then I was kind of like the shock collar.
Yeah.
And I mean, I prayed for a lot of people.
What that means is you basically are in charge to communicate everything to your people, right?
Right.
All the others, right?
In
right.
that unit?
In the
or a group?
In that, oh, yeah, in that prison, race. The whole thing.
Right.
Got it.
So, you know, I mean, you know, here's a story, right? So, you know, so I had my bunk and then, you know, there was a table where I prayed every day. And I think he was a paisa. See me, you know, like he sees me pray there. And then he comes up to me. I said, sit down. I guess you have to allow people to sit down in your thing.
Yeah.
You sit down.
Yeah.
He goes, well, you know what? I just, you know, can you pray for my son? He's having health issues, whatever. I said, okay, let's pray. So I prayed. Comes back again. He goes, you know, my son's not doing well. Yeah, can you pray? So I pray, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people were looking at me like, is that the right thing to do? Are you supposed to like sit down with
another race?
Cars,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And so then, pray?
Like I didn't mind him. And then he comes to me, he says, look, my son's really sick. He cannot go to school. He has to stay home, but we don't have a computer. I said, you know what? Because I was coaching one of the top agents in Tucson, Arizona. He would come visit me every weekend and I would coach him, right?
Oh, you were still putting in work.
yeah, right?
Wow.
So that
you never stopped, even though you were in there, you continued to go.
Right.
It's amazing.
So I was coaching him and stuff and I think he got over 250 deals while I was coaching him when I was there.
Wow.
So I said, hey, do you have like any extra computers or whatever? Here's a situation, this guy, you know, his son's sick, whatever. So he goes, all right, let me talk to my IT person. So he talked to his IT person. He goes, and next time I saw him, he did the address. So I asked for the address. I gave it to him. And the guy comes up to me crying, like this hardcore Mexican guy crying. He goes, bro, thank you. My son got his computer. I go, oh, really? And then he goes, oh, yeah, and a printer. And I go, wow, that's nice. So I asked the guy that I was coaching. He goes, yeah, my IT guy got him a brand new computer, like a high-speed computer.
Wow.
Put all the games, put everything on there, and gave him a computer. Wow. And then the Mexican guy goes, man, even my own car couldn't help me. And that's why he was crying, like, dude, you're an other. He called me other, right?
Yeah. I mean, it must suck to be called another, you know what I mean? And the others, right?
Yeah, right.
It's, I get it.
So, you know, and then everybody started talking like, oh yeah. I mean, so my goal when I went there was to grow my hair so I could, you know, donate my hair. So I had long hair, I had a long beard, right? And, you know, and they called me Filipino Jesus, Asian Jesus, like everything. So the whole, you know, there's rumors, you know, saying that.
It got out.
Yeah. So, so I held a meeting with all the shock haulers. I said, you know what? This is so dumb to me. So I said, okay, we'll hold a meeting and stuff. I said, look, you guys are almost out the door, right? I mean, people from like the higher levels.
Yes.
Now they're at the camp, right? And they still have that mentality, that prison mentality.
Right.
So I said, you know what? You guys are almost out the door.
Were you in federal?
I was in federal.
Federal, gotcha.
You guys are almost out the door. This will not work in society.
Right.
Right? So, you know what? We all live together. We should all share. Like the Mexicans, they run the kitchen. We run all the recreation. Like, dude, we all live together. Let's just make it peaceful. And for certain, they all agreed.
Really?
Oh, wow.
They all agree.
Unheard of.
And then the case manager goes, man, what was that meeting? Because everybody, like the whole camp changed. And I think that's why they cut my time short to go to the halfway house because of that whole thing.
Nice, nice. Before we get into anything else, were you coaching before you went in? Or is that something that you started after?
Not really coaching, but, you know, like
helping people,
like relationships.
Always helping, right? Always like, helping.
You know, like we would have masterminds. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I would give my feedback.
Right, right.
What I'm going through, how to structure. And then they would also give feedback.
Yep. Now, did it just hit me. Has it ever occurred that maybe this all happened because something bigger needed to change and you made something happen that never would have happened?
Right.
And maybe God's impacted their lives in a different
way. Well, sometimes when you lose everything, you find yourself, right? And what you're saying right now, it makes sense because you have a purpose, right?
Right.
And you find your purpose where you can move, and your voice and the way you speak and the way you are and just where you're at, vibrating and everything affects everybody around right? That's amazing.
But yeah, so that's a story in there. You know, I think my purpose, what God had me in there, was to pray for people. And that was, you know, that was a perfect example.
Yeah.
And to enlighten people's lives. Like, you know, there were some companies that came, you know, for like a job fair. And, you know, there's this guy, he was a white guy that's, I don't know, he's been in for like 20 something years. And I coach him to interview, right? And he actually got the job.
Wow.
So when he got out, he actually worked at a parts store.
Wow.
An automotive parts store.
Right.
So, you know, God used me
as
a tool, which is one of my affirmations every day.
Yeah.
He used me as a tool to help others. People.
And so you strengthened your coaching business after you got out.
Well, it's not really a business yet.
Got it.
I decided a couple of weeks ago that I'm going to make it a business.
No.
But in the beginning, it was just out of contribution.
Right.
Right? In the beginning. But now I decided it's going to be a business.
Wow, that's amazing to hear.
So I can reach out to more people.
Right. And so people know and not know how to reach you, where can they find you?
Well, I'm getting better on IG. So at the real Eric Elgato.
Okay. That's where they will find you.
Yep. Or, you know, my cell number, 619-954-4099.
Got you.
Best way to get a hold of me.
Got you.
Now, let me ask a quick question. Mm-hmm. Has there ever been a time when you were like, I mean, at the point of giving up? A specific story you can remember.
Giving up, you know, I've been a student of this game for so long.
See, I love it when you say that, man. I love it when you say I've been a student, because that's the mentality people need to adapt, man. I've been a student, right? It's so hard for people to be a student of anything, right? I love that.
Right, thank you. That giving up is not an option, right? Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, like a lot of people depend on me, not only family, but, you know, people, right?
Right.
So to waste my experience, I guess, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Right? Because I believe your test is your testimony.
Yes.
Your test is your testimony.
Yes.
If people could learn from me and not having to go through the heartache of learning it, that's why the people I'm coaching, they're succeeding so much faster.
Yeah.
They don't have to go, you know, 36 years.
It's a shortcut.
Right. Like, I've been there and done that. Right. There's some coaches who coach that haven't experienced making 25 contacts a day.
Right.
And they're coaching this.
Now, because social media allows anyone to say they're a coach.
We talk about this, man. There's people that don't have a muscle in their body and they're coaching body fitness and stuff like that too.
How are you supposed to know the emotional side of making contacts, let's say?
Yes.
The emotional side, the physical side.
Right.
Right? So I stand up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It takes energy. The energy.
Yes, energy.
To do many contacts. So they're teaching, oh yeah, do 25 contacts. Like, they can't even do five. They're teaching the knowledge, right? There's so much information and knowledge, but they don't know the experience right. and what mm-hmm. it takes.
So they're good in theory.
Right.
Right. But when rubber meets the road,
yeah. They've never done it.
They've never done it.
They've never done it.
Wow. Wow.
So, you know, for me to share that through experience, not mm-hmm. because I created a coaching program. I mean, it's so different.
Yeah.
And my delivery is different because I know.
Right. Right. So here's the question. Your why is so strong, right? That it has enough pull power to pull you through everything, right? What is your why? Because a lot of people don't even know how to have their why. They don't know what their why is. They don't know what their why is. And so they live life clueless.
That's a great question. And I know that question gets thrown around a lot.
Yes.
My why when I was growing my family is a lot different now because they're older, right?
Mm-hmm.
So your why changes as your life evolves.
Yes.
So now my why, and my two sons are in the business, now I have grandkids. My why has evolved from providing for my great, 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 great grandkids. Because at the time, my goal was to have my great grandkids driving Ferraris if they wanted.
Wow.
Right? Because I'm a car guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
If they want to drive Ferrari, my great grandfather, that's why I'm driving it.
Yes.
Now, yes, I still believe in the generational wealth,
mm-hmm.
but now it's changing the world through this.
Right.
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 To have the mindset to not give up. I mean, there's so much mental
challenges.
Yeah, challenges, right?
Mm-hmm.
That if they just had the right mindset, they wouldn't have these challenges.
Right.
Like depression. Depression is just a label.
Right.
That got deeper and deeper.
Right.
People get depressed because they got a flat tire. Depressed.
Right.
A flat tire?
Yeah.
There is no good time to have a flat tire.
Yeah, you don't have time for that.
Change it. Call AAA if you have it.
Mm-hmm.
Change it and move on.
Right.
But they get so emotionally
attached
to the negativity.
Yeah.
And
they start compiling it.
Right. And some people get addicted to that.
It becomes their focus.
Yes.
And they get addicted to being depressed. And then they pop pills and they get addicted to the pill. Like,
wow. You know what?
Change this. Change the label.
Yes.
It's easier said than done. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But you change a label. I wish more people would change a label on lead generation.
Mm. Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Well, I mean, it's become a norm now. People will tell you, just do 25 contacts. Like, that wasn't even a thought in our day.
Right.
That was like playing small.
Right.
Right.
So you have a call center.
I do.
You have people work the call centers.
Yes.
They call.
Yeah.
I don't know how much money they make, but they don't make as much money as a real estate agent doing the deal.
At all.
But they're happy.
1,000%.
Because of the label.
Yeah.
It's the mindset that changes things.
Yes.
It's the mindset.
It's the mindset that makes you ungrateful or makes you look at the bad in every good, right?
The whole world's negative. Right.
Well, that's part of the reason why we started No Quitters, because everyone just tries once or twice and then they just quit. Right. Sometimes they don't even try. They just think about it too much that they sold themselves out of it.
That's right.
They never even got started.
Because they haven't been taught the process of thinking.
Right. You know what? Now that you say that, man, I read this where it says most people remain poor because of their poor thinking habits.
Yes.
Not poor working habits, because people work really hard. They just don't think.
That's right. It's mindset. The key, I mean, on my Facebook page, it says mindset is everything.
Mm-hmm. It is.
100%. Right.
It is.
So when you learn how to, here's a key point.
Mm-hmm.
Clarity is key.
Yes.
Right? If a thought doesn't serve you, you have the power to stop it and change it.
See, that's the beauty of life, man.
But people don't, they're not aware of their thoughts. They just go through life not being aware of their thoughts.
Right.
That is the major thing.
Right. I don't know if you heard of this or not, Benny, or you. There's this thing called hypnotic rhythm.
I've heard of it.
Right, where people just start acting because of everything that's around them.
Wherever they're taken.
Wherever they're taken, right?
React.
And this world is so emotional, right? That when someone tries to speak any logic, you're looking like you think you know it all, or you're dumb, or you're this, or whatever it is, right? I mean, right now, you dropped a lot of bombs. Faith in your life and in your career and your success has been a tremendous. God's existence never was questioned, even through being in prison and everything, right? Which is amazing, because some people, they like you said, they just have a flat tire. They're like, you know what? Fuck this. I don't want to go through this no more.
Yep.
Right? That's amazing to hear. So at one point, you never ever even questioned about quitting. You always had this grit, this dog inside of you that just fought.
Ever since, that thing happened,
mm-hmm.
I was humbled, right? And, with my faith, the Bible, talks about humble.
Mm-hmm.
And this just happened a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
Being humble with your faith is how it's supposed to be.
Yes.
Being humble doesn't serve the people around you. Being humble and bold does.
Yes, yes. Humble but bold.
Yes.
Is the key. Yes.
So, and this just happened a couple of weeks ago. Now, people talk, right? And, some information got back to me, like, he's a has-been, talks about, this stuff. And you know what? That dog, seriously,
it's out.
It's on.
Yes. Right?
So, I decided to make my coaching an actual business now.
Yeah.
Just being bold with business.
Yes.
Right? But it totally changed, because we need to be bold, not only for ourselves, but the people around us.
Yes.
To pull them up, not to lower yourself to make them feel
to
better.
To fit in.
Yeah, or to fit in.
Yeah.
Or to be accepted.
Yeah.
Right?
100.
Being bold is going to impact more people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
My coaching, I coach 8 people or whatever. But now I'm thinking, what if I could change 100 people's lives, 1,000?
Yeah.
Right.
1,000,000 people just, by this. That would be amazing.
Yep.
Right?
Yes. Yes, it will.
So it just happened a couple of weeks ago.
So you discovered your purpose, and it sparked your life. You feel that spark again. You're on fire now.
Wow. Yes.
Oh my God.
On fire.
Wow.
That is.
So if you were going to share something with our listeners out there, what would you give them as the one thing that was impactful in your life that you learned or you teach?
I would have to say, blind faith, right? We have all these goals, or we declare these goals. We've never been there. We've never done that. It's really the stronger your faith is to reach your goal,
belief,
it increases you to get there.
Right.
Yes.
Right? If a person wants to do 25 deals, like every single person I coach has gotten great results. One person I'm coaching right now, 2 deals last year, started coaching with me in January. I changed his belief about everything. Changed his belief.
Yeah.
Faith.
Yeah.
He's already closed 4 deals already.
This year.
Four deals, and he has four pending.
Wow.
That's what changed? Of course, you know, coaching, you know, with me, but what did I actually do?
Just changed his mindset, his
view. The way
view.
He thinks helped him.
The way he understands. And he needs to believe it. His goal was 11 this year. He's at
gonna double
eight
that.
Closed and pending already.
Yep.
The first quarter.
See, this is what I'm saying. Just a little sprinkle of believing in someone.
Mm-hmm.
Having blind, like,
it's possible.
He looks at me like, you know, like, oh my God, this guy's done it. Mm-hmm. So whatever I say,
he believes.
He doesn't even question.
No.
And you know what? Like, he's working out now. Like, the whole thing, like, what? Who are you? Right? But God used me as a tool to change his life.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
And it blesses me more than him because my affirmation is God used me as a tool to help change people's lives.
Yep.
Use me as a tool.
Yes.
Four closed, four pendings. He closed two all of last year. That's insane.
Yeah.
Do you know how you have to change? I mean, how much change you have to go through to go from two to eight?
Yeah, how
in the
deep,
first quarter?
Yeah, how deep you had to go in there and grab them to pick them up, right? A lot of people don't understand the power of coaching.
Oh my gosh, the
power of just letting someone guide you, someone that has the experience, right?
They have to be willing to let you guide them,
right?
And then all you do is drop possibility in their mind, and because it's coming with credibility, opens the doors for them. And once things start happening,
game over.
It's game over.
Game over.
They'll never go back to that old way of thinking.
Fantastic, man. I mean, you dropped a lot of bombs, man. I mean, that's amazing to hear. Right here, we have something where we ask our listeners, right? There's only two type of people, right? Some, if you can go back and change something, would you? Or are you grateful of what you went through because what you went through made you who you are right now? Which one are you?
I wouldn't change. The hardest part of my life was going to prison. I would not change that. Can I tell you why?
Sure. We want to know why.
My kids were driving BMWs, Mercedes, and Porsches in high school. We're horrible parents. Behave, have good grades, right?
Yeah.
We had
help. You were spoiling them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't speak for my wife. I enabled my children. And that's not good. We have to allow them to grow and fail, and we're there to pick them up.
Right.
Right.
As a parent, when you have everything, you kind of rob them from that experience.
Yes. True. So through failure, through hardship, you grow.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the blessing when me and my wife went away, I don't know about the baby because he was still young, but the older kids, you know, they had to quit college. Right. They had to work. They had to help support my son, their brother, right?
Wow.
And it was hard for them.
Wow.
Now looking back, right, because it happened a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
now they felt hardship. So now they're working hard.
Now they understand. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They felt some pain.
Yeah.
Pain. Pain is usually good for you. I don't suggest to force the pain.
Yeah.
Right? But when pain happens, right, you grow.
Yes.
And growth is uncomfortable and pain is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But the more pain you go through, the more successful, whatever you define success as, you get there because of through the pain. The pain of getting rejected.
Yes.
Most people avoid it. So what do they actually avoid? They avoid success.
Yes. That, without even knowing it.
Without even knowing it.
Yeah.
But because we're having this conversation, if somebody watches this and says,
shit, I'm avoiding something right now.
Yes.
Maybe I shouldn't.
And go, like, going full blown, right?
Not tiptoeing around and just go full on.
Full on. And you have to have the blind faith to do it.
Blind faith.
Blind faith. Before we finish off, can you define what blind faith is? Because a lot of people have a different interpretation of this.
Blind faith, in my definition, is attaining something that you haven't attained before and believing that you will receive it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my goal was 1,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
People thought I was crazy. Like, no way.
Right.
You know, Eric, you're talking out of your, you know what.
Right. But faith is one thing, because a lot of people just pray for things but never do anything about it. So faith and action go hand in hand.
That's right.
Right? When you put it like this, how you define it? Because obviously you just didn't, you didn't sit around and just prayed for it. You were blessed and then you took action.
So your faith is believing in something.
Yes.
Right? Just like I'm a believer.
Mm-hmm.
I have faith.
Yes.
I have faith that God will lead my steps.
Mm-hmm.
That's blind.
Yeah.
How do I know that?
I don't.
I haven't met Jesus face to face yet. How do I know he's real?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's that blind faith.
Yes.
That the blind faith that you cannot be steered.
Mm-hmm.
It's so solid, right?
Gotcha.
It's like air. We know it's real because we need to breathe it,
yeah.
But we know it's there. We just know it.
Yeah.
We haven't seen air.
Right.
But we have the faith.
But that it keeps us alive.
Keeps it alive. Right?
Yeah.
So does that,
yeah,
does that answer your question?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got to have that undeniable belief that it's real. So now, because I've been through my experiences, I believe when I set something, I believe it's going to happen. With no doubt. It's just a matter of time, right? Yep.
There's That's no powerful. Bad...
There's no bad goals. There's only bad time frames, right?
Yeah.
And we just be resilient and be strong and have that belief.
Absolutely.
That's it. Blind faith, guys. I mean, if there's anything you got out of that entire conversation, there was a lot of nuggets, was blind faith is key. Just explained it, and it's understanding that 100%.
Amen.
Eric, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
Yep, thank you for having me.
Yeah. And once again, guys, if you guys want to follow Eric, where can they find you on Instagram?
The real Eric Allegato.
The real Eric Allegato.
With my high school picture.
There you go. All right. Well, that was the last of this episode, number 4, with No Quitters and Eric. Thank you so much, guys, for joining.
Thanks, guys. Until the next one.